Welcome back to Four Guys, One Film. And today we watched a film from 1968, about 57 years ago, a classic called Bullet.
Ka-chow.
Directed by Peter Yates, starring the one and only Steve McQueen, King Ka-chow. Of Cool. Ka-chow, indeed. Now, I think most of the films that we've seen have been pretty contemporary. Maybe the earliest film we've seen was like from the 90s, possibly. No. Late 80s. To Live and Die in L.A., right? Which goes in pretty damn good with Bullet. But this one, again, 1968. I mean, what can be said about this film? I mean, the title, Bullet, is already badass. You got Steve McQueen. You got the best car chase you've ever seen from that era of the 20th century, George. All right, don't get it confused. 20th century.
Don't get it twisted, George. Shut the fuck up.
There are a lot of other actors in this film, but, you know, doesn't really matter because you got Steve McQueen. But my question to you guys is, would you even think? All right, this is an old movie, different pace. You're not used to this. What'd you guys think?
I think it's a cheap man's Heat. I'm saying it right now from the start. Me and Nick were talking about as the movie was going on.
It's half the runtime too.
It's half the runtime. It's half the emotions, half the acting.
Nobody's got a great ass. Is all I'm saying.
A great ass.
Well, you know, I feel like this is one of my actual favorite films, and maybe because I saw it before I even saw Heat.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, when I saw Heat, I was like, oh, shit, it's just like Bullet, like, in this scene and that scene. But I've also never seen an actor like Steve McQueen at the time that I saw the film.
And in this movie?
Yeah.
Where'd you see this movie, by the way?
I think I was pretty, I don't know.
Because I will say he's quintessential cool, but I wouldn't say, like, oh, I'm fucking going to go watch a Steve McQueen movie for...
After watching this, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like, he's definitely a cool guy, cool character. That scowl that he has going on throughout the whole movie, iconic, right?
I think that's the thing, because, like, you have actors like Brad Pitt, and, I mean, who else is cool? I mean, you got Pacino, you got De Niro, right?
Like, I wouldn't consider them cool. I think they're just, like...
I think Pacino's cool.
I think they're, like, classically cool, like, they're classically good actors,
Craig,
I would say.
Daniel Craig really gives you vibes.
Right. Daniel Craig.
We talked about if like Spielberg was going to actually remake, Daniel Craig would be a fantastic option.
Exactly.
Way more range.
But I think Steve McQueen just has an aura that, you don't need, like, I know you guys said that he's not the best actor, but I don't think that's what made this movie special. It was the music, his aura, the car chase, just the vibe.
Well, you know, at the end, he was
like Keanu in a way.
Yeah, you know what? I could
not
agree with
the
that.
Best, like, actor when it comes to range and all that stuff. Yeah. As well, but all his movies are fucking
right. But it's like if you put him in, like, something that works, if you put him in the Matrix, shit, even like Bill and Ted, like, it works, it does well. But then you put him in something kind of like a bit
even
more artsy.
Speed.
Even Speed, yeah. If you put Keanu in something like Dracula, you know, it doesn't really quite work.
Yeah, like he doesn't got the range for that. You know,
right. So you gotta make it right. You gotta make the right choice. And Steve McQueen definitely kind of. I've only really seen two of his films. So it's this one and the Thomas Crown Affair, and they were kind of the same character. But McQueen as a person was pretty badass. I know Isaac knows.
Yeah, he raced in 24 Hours of Le Mans. He was an actual race car driver. Like, he basically funded all of his fun activities through acting, and he would pretty much doing whatever the fuck he wanted to do at the time.
Yeah, I think if we do have a modern Steve McQueen, it's, well, A, I think we already have a director called Steve McQueen, but I think it'd be Brad Pitt.
I think it'd be Patrick Dempsey.
Nah, I mean, Patrick Dempsey's cool, but he doesn't have, like, the star power.
Oh, for, you know, star, I mean? Power, no. But, like, I think in terms of, like, what they actually do, because, like, Patrick Dempsey actually races. Like, that's, like...
Oh, he's racist?
Yeah, he actually races...
he races.
What race is
he? George is racist. Patrick Dempsey, racist.
Yeah, racist.
He's a race car driver.
Yeah, he's actually, like, he funds his own team every year and all
that
stuff.
That's pretty... I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, like, he literally used all of his Grey's Anatomy, money to fucking become...
He's a really handsome guy, too.
Yeah.
You got his hair going on right now.
You know, I'm trying to see where it goes.
I like this more than last week's hair, I will say.
It has its awkward spots. I'm kind of just trying to just work through
it. I was really disappointed with it last week.
It happens, Isaac. You know, sometimes you don't know where it's going to go. Now, I think one of the things about the movie is that, yes, it's cool, but I don't think it'd be as cool if it wasn't for the music. I know you guys, I told you guys earlier, it's composed by Lalo Schifrin. He did the music in Rush Hour.
And you kind of hear some of those points, especially when they're like,
Pink
Las Vegas.
Yeah, very Pink Panther-esque.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
It's definitely like a smooth, upbeat jazz.
Yeah. And that's like, I feel like it's the signature and kind of the blood flow of the film, because it, like, once you start to see that something's happening, like, the music's already creeping up. It's already letting you know, hey, something's about to happen.
And that's kind of a good thing. That's something that movies back in the day really focused on, because I think they knew they didn't have the best actors, right? Like, that's, they're the best for their time, right? But like, when you have, when you set the, like, the ambiance of what's going on, like the cinematography we're talking about, mm-hmm. and like how it was actually like potentially gonna, did it actually win, Andre, quick question, did it actually win Oscar for best editing? Yeah, like, you, the editing was fantastic. Like,
it was very good. We talked about a lot of different shots. Yeah. Specifically, like, the car wash shot where,
yeah, it was,
when he was coming up to the taxi.
And, dude, yeah, that car chase scene, like, what basically takes most of, like, the most important scene of the movie, I would feel like, right?
Yeah.
Like, just to film that back then, like, the cameras, like, they would have to do so much modifications to the car just to even get the fucking camera to do some of the angles they were doing.
Yeah, especially from shots within the car of going down and up the hills.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, like, It kind of felt like first person perspective in this film. Like, you were in the car, you were figuring things out with them, you know, like, it all worked together so that you were kind of in the movie. And I think that's what makes it special to me, because I feel like I'm, like, right there next to Frank Bullitt trying to figure this shit out. And honestly, like I know you guys were kind of confused. Like, it was a little hard to track.
I was pretty focused. I was pretty locked in.
Well, Isaac is always focused. Like, he somehow gets it no matter what,
Well, one thing that I really liked about the chase sequence is, like, we talked about this in To Live and Die in L.A. And most modern films, like, you know, Fast and the Furious, they have so many fast cuts that it just seems, like, not real. Like, it's like, oh, it takes you out of the actual action. This has so many long shots and so many, like, sequences where it's like, holy shit, they're actually fucking racing each other and we're watching it happen. And it's, like, portrayed so well. Like you said, it really brings you in the passenger seat.
And I think that's what's disappointing is that movies nowadays, they make quick cuts to kind of save time or, like, just make things look better. But, like, back then, and I think that goes for anything, whether you're filming a long car chase, a long dialogue, or, like, a Jackie Chan film where you're doing, like, actual fight scenes and you're doing a long sequence, like, it always feels more genuine when you see the whole thing.
Something for me as a point, too, is, like, when you think about, like, modern car movies, like, when you talked about Fast and the Furious, and you know, we've talked about it in other podcasts, we haven't done a review of it, but, like, Baby Driver, I feel like nowadays you see consistently, like, going back to score, music just takes over these scenes. Like, you just get either some hard rock, some really loud like pop music, something that's just gonna, like, explode the scene and make you also, like, kind of take away from the sounds of, like, the engines, the cars, which that's something that I really liked about this. Like, I really enjoyed, you know, we talked about the deadpan facial expressions and how that kind of took me out of it a little bit. But then we said, well, isn't that real, though? Like, when you watch a NASCAR driver, they're not, or whether they're doing Le Mans or something like that, they're not, like, making crazy facial expressions at every turn and movement. Sure, sometimes it happens going 200 miles an hour. But if you're just driving 60, 80, 100 even, like, and you're a professional driver, like Steve McQueen actually was, you're going to be in your element. You're going to be in your zone.
Well, to add to that, it looked like he probably did all those driving scenes.
Yeah, absolutely.
He had the actual
gloves off.
He actually killed those two guys.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
They were dead straight up.
You couldn't recognize the bodies. They were burnt to a crisp.
But yeah, no, I loved the sounds of the cars. I loved being able to just focus on the screeching and just the natural aspect of those scenes. I feel like you made the conversation how, you know, some of us were already kind of questioning McQueen's star power during that time. And you said, well, you shut up during that racing scene, didn't you? I think that that does that. It's kind of like a conversational trick where when someone's yelling at you and you calm down and you slow
good
down,
point.
Everybody kind of, to match your level, they go down. So when it kind of quiets us down, it made everybody in the room kind of silence down a little bit, focus on what's happening on the screen, and absorb it.
Yeah, because we're as focused as he is.
Exactly.
And I think movies just don't do that anymore, man. Like, I don't know, like,
like, this happened in Heat, like, with the whole gunfight.
We were locked in.
They used real gun sounds, you know, like, they matched it. It was a long sequence.
And I think ever since we improved the sound in the studio, right? Like, movies have really been more enjoyable, especially, like, when it comes to, like, movies that are focused on sound. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And that's really why I was excited to watch Bullet here, because I was like, it's going to sound fucking good. But it's crazy because I think, obviously, this film is before Heat. It's before To Live and Die in L.A. And I can't say if these films were directly influenced by Bullet, but I think there's, like, a thread here.
Absolutely. Well, like, I think there's a lot of scenes that, like, in Heat that we see in Bullet. Like, the airport, you know, instead of a car chase, there's a gunfight.
Even that dinner scene, remember?
The dinner scene, right? There's a lot of similarities. Even the kind of the cat and mouse game that's in Bullet is also in Heat.
Right.
With both two antagonists and and the protagonist in right. this movie. So.
And I think a lot of people can say, I think it's true. Like, this movie is slow. It's very slow. But
I don't think it's slow.
I didn't
don't
find the pacing a problem. Like I said, like
I kind of did. I didn't like the pacing. Okay. Because it was definitely like you were in those intense moments. It was dope. But then there's also sequences where like Steve McQueen is just fucking, he's walking through the halls and this guy's supposed to be chasing the fucking bad guy.
He's like, hello.
I thought that was
realistic because you're just not gonna run.
I wonder if that was more of a period thing, right? Like,
I think it is because it's like with newer films. Sorry to interrupt you. Newer films, like the pacing just seems to keep getting escalated and escalating, and then like to the point where it's like it's almost unwatchable because there's so many cuts and you're just kind of like much action in every split second that it's so much. But this is a little bit different than that.
To play a little devil's advocate, though, I think, like, we talked about, like, oh, well, what, like, he can't radio in at the time. He can't call, obviously, because he'd have to stop to, like, ask the front desk to give wire specific number or something like that. So I think they have to play a little bit more kind of cool and calm on the, and really detective work. I will agree that, you know, some things that took me out of it is, like, why did he draw his gun at the last fucking scene of the movie? Like,
that was a choice.
It was a bad choice, in my opinion, but you're right. It is a choice. But, I mean, I just felt like it's if you think about the fact that he only drew his gun when it was the witness he was trying to protect and not when it was the killers who were trying to kill his witness, just takes me out of it a little bit.
Can I say something? I think that's a modern problem, though, because it's like, you got to think about it. In the 1960s, there wasn't no fucking cameras. There was no fucking metal. The guy had a fucking gun on the plane. So, like, it's just like, most of the time, these guys actually have to try to catch him.
Yeah.
It's not like nowadays we're like, oh, if they did the exact same thing in today, they would have got caught by every fucking camera. And at that point, you know it's your guy. You can kill this guy. Like, there's not a problem, right?
Well, I guess here's my thing, right, though, is that, like, in my opinion, when, for example, we talk about the hospital scene.
Let me add something. And even when the DA came into the office, like, none of this is going to stand in court. You have no, like, verbal, like, or eyewitness reports coming into it. So, like, this means nothing to us. You said that these guys did all this shit, but we're at the end of the day, we're relying on a hunch, so.
Yeah, so that's what's funny to me is it's like he was willing to do some reckless ass shit behind the wheel of the car, and you know, didn't really think about the consequences there.
Could have killed a lot of people.
Could have killed a lot of people. Could have done a lot of bad. I mean, that's what they said. He's like, you got a witness injured from falling off a motorcycle from your stunt, but you weren't willing to draw a gun against a possibly armed gunman inside of a hospital who was coming after your witness. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's also true.
It takes me out a little bit, but I mean, you know, movies don't have to be perfect. We've seen flaws in a lot of different movies and stuff like that.
I mean, let's be real. Is he the best cop you've ever seen? No.
He's fucking
not at all.
He got every fucking person killed.
I think he did everything.
Willem Dafoe and, you know, Boondocks.
No. That's the best cop
I've
ever seen.
That's a man who's willing to do what it takes.
Emphasis on man.
Yeah.
He wasn't even afraid of the internet. That's the crazy part.
He was willing to bang other men to close the case.
You know what? Yeah. That's a man who's got a lot of shit in his grundle, if you know what I'm saying. That's why. Willem Dafoe,
shit in his grundles.
He's caring.
I like the way that sounds.
God dang.
He's packing heat.
According to Nick, it's the size of our microphones.
Yeah, at least.
I think it's bigger than this microphone.
Yeah.
Jesus, man. I'm talking girth-wise.
More realistic, for sure. You know, the pacing and everything. But I just think it takes away from, like, the cinematic aspect, but that it's also due to the, you know.
But last thing though, with pacing, we did really like. Let's talk about that scene with the evidence. We talked about how nowadays movies just shovel in like, oh, here's the thing that we needed. Here's the passport.
That's right.
But it just like the small details of going through the things in the suitcase. That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except the fact that they didn't have any gloves and they were like, hey,
yeah, he's like,
we're going to
make a friend.
And most of them, like, immediately they're going through the fucking evidence and they're like, bingo, got it. And he's like, what the fuck? You didn't do shit, bitch.
Yeah.
At least here you see him work for it.
It's like somehow I immediately knew there was a false drawer directly inside of this armoire. It's like, fuck you.
Queen was like, nah, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Deadpan.
Let's figure this out, boys. I think another cool aspect of the film is just the period. Like, this doesn't look like what we see now. Like, this is a totally different San Francisco. The technology is completely different. Like,
no
even,
tagging,
even
no
the
homeless,
detective
no needles.
Work is different. Like, it really feels like a different world. Like, to me, San Francisco kind of looked like a version of France.
It did.
You know?
It had more of a refined character.
Yeah, like the style,
clean,
the wardrobe, people just like sitting, you know, at the cafes or restaurants just chilling. Like, it looked
like even those old people that had sunglasses, they were just chilling.
Yeah,
they just looked like baller.
Yeah, dude. And I don't know what season it was, whether it was spring or summer, but it looked like a pleasant time.
It looked hot.
Yeah, only, you know, small amounts of DEI, so, you know, it's nice.
That's what we're getting to now.
That's now, like, now we're making it 1968, political.
1968, crypto all the way.
We had an African-American doctor that, you know, they didn't say anything about.
Well, yeah, the DA immediately asked to get him removed.
Yeah, that was pretty fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, period piece makes sense.
Well,
I mean,
the DA just said, like, I want to get somebody with more experience.
No, he
with
valid,
with the guy, like, the doctor said with an attitude. Honestly,
for the time, it was pretty subtle, like, compared to what it could have done. You know? Yeah. So I
they even alluded to the fact that this guy was disrespecting him, thinking that he's not competent.
And he was, he's like, he's the best one.
And McQueen was kind of like upset, like he was visibly upset.
Yeah, he even said, "I'll take all the heat. This is all put it on me."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which
is nice to see.
Showed he was a stand-up guy. You know, got a deadpan person, and I mean, but still stand up.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think, you know, you guys said Steve McQueen was kind of a bad actor, but I think there were just small, subtle choices that he made in his dialogue and his mannerisms that kind of showed you what kind of person he is.
But I feel like there was a lack of dialogue. I think.
Yeah, I can agree to that, but there was a point to it, right? Because they even like referenced that, like, hey, like, you're so cold, like, how do you do this?
But I feel like, okay, so when I think of, like, Steve McQueen's character, right, I think of, again, we talk about Al Pacino in Heat, which I feel like sometimes we mention, like, with all the cocaine and all the other shit, he kind of overdoes it sometimes. He has these lines that are just like, dude, I know you asked the director, let me do something right here, okay? Let me this, whatever bullshit he does. But then I also think of, like, Steve McQueen right now, and I think of John Wick, right? Mm. In the sense of, like, less lines, especially when we're thinking about the last one.
Right.
But I do feel like even John Wick in his last movie had way more use of facial expressions. And we're talking about Keanu, who already doesn't do a lot.
But I think what helped Keanu in most of the John Wick movies was the fact that he was in motion. Like, he physically was in motion. So he's like...
But even his running, it felt like it didn't feel... It felt like, you know what it kind of gave me vibes of? Like, you know when you watch Daniel Craig as James Bond?
Yeah.
And he's just, like, casino, like, moving around cool or, like, walking, but not in any action. Not in any actual, like life or death or dangerous situations. But just, like, I'm Bond, cool, and that's it. It felt like every single moment of his life had to be that.
Exactly.
Steve McQueen did the original show.
I don't know what the problem is, though.
No, my problem is...
I didn't like it.
Well, George...
I love it, George.
I think that I don't know if, sorry to interrupt you, but I don't know if it was just like the character was badly written, or if it was like Steve McQueen just couldn't pull off the cool guy character that he
was. No, I think he could pull off the
cool. I think you're so wrong, George.
I think you're wrong.
I mean, honestly, I don't know if it's just the period, but he just seemed like he was trying too hard to be just cool, calm.
I think the opposite.
I think he was subtle cool, but in a way that was just overdone.
To me, he just looked bored. The whole fucking
I find vibes,
like,
of bored,
like,
too.
He just like, all
but
right,
that almost
cool.
gives me like schoolyard boy, where it's like, you know how like they always say, like, oh, if you want, like you watch like a Fairly Odd Parents, and like the one time that the girl actually wants Timmy is when Timmy just doesn't give a shit, and she's like tell me I'm pretty and shit like that.
You know,
like, that's the vibes I get.
Or you
so
know
like,
what I think it's just a level.
Love the
of,
reference.
I think it's just there's a level of neutrality in him as he's acting this out, because he just like, okay, if somebody dies, cool. If somebody doesn't die, cool. If I catch him, cool.
Yeah, like the fact that I never even caught a glimpse of like shit didn't go his way.
No emotion.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he had multiple moments where when we think about Pacino, like Pacino necessarily wasn't really happy in Heat all the whole time. But you could show, like, you can have a character who's dead a little bit to things like happiness, to things like
but
like
I do want to remind you, it's the late 60s.
You're right.
The style is very different. We don't have the complexities that we see in a film like Heat, which was like 30 years later.
Yeah, I just feel like he could have shown a little bit more, like, even frustration.
But
I said, shit didn't go his way. He should have been frustrated.
But I will say, at the time, there's already actors like Marlon Brando, like, doing a fucking The Godfather. The Godfather 1 was
wait,
like in,
that wasn't in the 60s.
That was
70s.
Early 70s,
though. Who was playing Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Well, that was...
Probably like in the 70s, too.
Yeah. Like, that was... Around.
I guess you're right. Maybe I'm generalizing too much.
Didn't you also recently watch Lawrence of Arabia?
I was thinking about that movie, actually. And yeah, that was also interesting. I mean, I think the acting, you know, it is different. But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot more.
The original Godfather was 72. So it's not too far off.
Not too far off.
And like I said, I mean, a little more devil's advocate. I can see that reading this character for him and seeing like what this guy was all about, you know, what Bullitt was all about. He thought, I need to lean into cool. I need to lean into this guy who's always got it under control, who's just locked in and ready to, for the next move. But like I said, like the subtleties, they were there, but they were a little too subtle for me.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
and going back to Heat, you know, like when we see Robert De Niro's character, like as the antagonist, where he's kind of always calm, cool, collected, but even towards the end of the movie, we see that there's a shift in him.
That unravels a little.
Like he's like, oh shit, like stressful stuff is happening. I need to be stressed out. I'm actually a revengeful bastard. I need to go do this. Yeah. And
well, even at the beginning of Heat, you see him when their heist essentially doesn't not go wrong, but when when he decides to off those guys, and he just says like, get this fucker out of me, like he's upset. He's still like, at a calm.
But there's still emotion. Like, yeah. There's a range. And
I want to see the visceral response where he's like, I'm almost about to fucking catch this guy and let me fucking get him.
Yeah.
And the scene where he's literally hopping off the plane, he just kind of takes his time. He does a little prance.
He's very calculated. Yeah, I think to me, I see this guy as somebody who's done this so much, so long that he's just like tired of it. Because at the end of the film, like he's not a young cop. He's an older cop. Because at the end of the film, he goes home, he sees his girl, he's like, all right, she's asleep.
Some and then lethal weapon, I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yeah, and then he collects himself in front of the mirror. Like, you could, like, he's not breaking, but he's just kind of like, fuck, man, like, another one, you know? And then he puts the bullets are on the side, and, like, that's the end of the movie.
Yeah, which was a really nice ending. I liked it.
It was a nice ending.
And I will say this. I don't think anybody else could have made that movie during the time period, because, like, the majority of the movie was supposed to be like a cool, calm, collected, like, it has to be somebody like McQueen. I don't think there's anybody that could have made the movie again, right? Like,
I don't think the movie would have been made without him, actually.
Because I'm like, the iconic car chasing, the way he dressed was just like nice, smooth, clean, like cool. His Mustang GT350, like beautiful car, like it fit. Like when he's in that fucking car, it fits so perfectly well.
Like, I'm not a car guy. Yeah. You guys know this, but I really like that car. Yeah. Like, ever since I saw the movie, I was like, holy shit, like, I wish I could have a car.
Yeah, my last
like
Mustang
that.
Was that color.
The Charger.
Yeah, that's right. It was. It was.
Like, those guys.
You mean
like,
the Challenger?
I'm sorry, the Challenger.
No, it was a Charger.
It was a Charger.
It's a Charger.
I got his ass.
Charger. Fucking slut. Regardless, hey, those guys look cool as shit, too, in that car. And they were just kind of like, this guy's been chasing us for a cool fucking.
They were all cool
miles.
Too.
They were. I'm like, they were fucking killing it.
They
as
were
well,
barely
you
breaking.
You know,
sweat.
I will say the driver of that Challenger showed more emotion than Steve McQueen.
Exactly.
Because even like when he was driving and then he
the
just
smirks.
Like, and then he's just like, oh shit, there's a motherfucker chasing us. Like you saw his eyes like they didn't like fully open, but you just see like, oh shit, it looked like a realization.
Right. Like shit, I thought we lost them.
Yeah, because like I said, like he doesn't need to show that level of emotion of like what they do nowadays in modern car chase scenes or anything like that, where they're like basically screaming at themselves, making all sorts of crazy
fucking Ricky Bobby, dude.
Yeah, we don't need that. We don't need that. But that's like ridiculous. You're telling me you can't be frustrated when you like might have lost him.
I guess I see your point. Like it would have been nice to see moments of where
just
McQueen's maybe
range.
Just like rubbing his forehead or just
like
you know
like,
he needs a moment to collect himself.
Or like you know, I think even like a simple smile, like when they pan from the driver in the Charger to him in the car actually being behind them and just giving me like a little fucking smirk. A little smirk. Right.
Or like a little bit more like fucking like when he put the DA in his place and he realized that he's like, you gave me the wrong witness to protect.
Yeah.
Essentially like he also said that just like he did the rest of everything else. You know? Yeah. Going back to the car, I really did like seeing this type of old school car in this movie. Like it even reminded me of like how much I loved the new Batmobile in the Batman.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
because
you hear that roar.
If we're talking about movie cars, what do you guys think is your favorite movie car of all time? Because there's a lot.
What are we talking? Like movie car we'd like to have or movie car?
I think period.
Mad Max.
Which car?
Yeah.
The one from the poster of Fury Road.
Andre knows the name of that car. What's it called again?
It's like
the Interceptor.
Interceptor.
There you go.
It's a Ford Interceptor from Australia.
Yeah. It's
also Death Proof. What's that fucking one? With a skull?
Oh, I don't know the name of the car, but like I know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's definitely
like,
a classic muscle car.
That's a fucking badass.
Yeah.
Great fucking car.
I mean, really, I think muscle cars in general are just beautiful to look at, to listen to, you know, to probably to feel. I've never really been in one. I mean, would you consider yours a muscle car?
I mean, it
technically is.
It technically is. Yeah. Mine is not because it's an EcoBoost because I don't have the gas money for that shit for the fucking V8. But
you know, it's funny because I remember when I drove your last Mustang and I was like, dude, like it feels cool, but goddamn, the hood is so big. I remember. I feel like that's how fucking muscle cars are.
Yeah, like it is really weird. Like honestly, to think of like the 68 Mustang and it does look tiny. Like yeah, I will be honest. Like it.
Well, compared to modern cars, yeah.
Yeah, compared to modern cars, but even then, for that age, like think about the block engines that were in these Chargers and these Challengers, these Mustangs. Like it was fucking big. Like it was a lot. But I mean, guess going into the rest of us, I don't know what you guys think for cars. Yeah. Like Isaac mentioned.
I mean, I think you pointed out a good one though. The last Batmobile for sure.
Let me guess for Gator, JDM, Supra. Fast and the Furious.
No.
Yeah. Really?
I think Isaac likes big cars.
I would like one of the lowriders from
called? From Napoleon Dynamite?
No, not from Napoleon Dynamite. What's it? Fuck.
Uncle Rico's van. Yeah.
Like for me, my ultimate dream car would be a 1969 Cadillac Coupe de Ville 2-door hardtop.
Is that a pimp car?
It's not a pimp car. It's really not. Like it has the jet wings at the end of the back. It's super iconic. When you see it, you see it. To me, it's a beautiful car.
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, you think about like Smokey and the Bandit.
Is that in a movie?
What is it?
I would say Don Draper has it in.
It's
in
a
1969 Cadillac Coupe de Ville hardtop 2-door. Those things are going for like $250,000.
That's a pimp car for sure.
It's not a pimp car.
Come on, man. You're telling me
it's a classy car? Man's car.
Come on, man. I see a pimp can coming out of that.
Look at them like
casino, dude.
When they're well done and like they're just to me the
low rider, you said?
It'd be
you want it all tricked out with.
I wouldn't low rider. I would definitely put it on bags, but I wouldn't put it on like a jump.
Right. Alexis, how about you, dude?
I like the Batman Batmobile. That last
one. The one from the new one?
The muscle car one. Yeah, that was
pretty sick. I think it was a Charger,
yeah. Yeah, it was a converted one.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if you guys remember the General Lee. That one was also a fucking badass Charger.
The General Lee.
You piece of shit.
What's that from?
It's from
the Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard, dude. Like, that, because, I mean, I'm not going to lie, that was more, like, you didn't get to see all the street racing and stuff like that, but without the actual Confederate flag on it's a badass car. Especially how they used it. And then, you know, I'll be the one to do something.
Oh, it's the orange 69 Dodge Charger.
Yep.
I love the Nissan Skyline R34. That's my dream car from Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah.
I would fucking love Brian O'Connor. Honestly, if I had a choice, though, his all blue one at the very beginning.
The Valside blue?
Yeah, that one was before he got his gray one with the iconic like stripes on the side of the car. Yeah. And then besides that, the obvious choice would be Bumblebee. Come on, you guys are fucking stupid. Why would you not want a car? No. Then all I could go fast as fuck, but could shoot everybody. All right?
That's
wild. I'd be like Ice, bro.
Then I'd be fucking Optimus Prime then, bitch. Like
No, because Optimus Prime isn't owned, okay? He's his own person. But Bumblebee, he's a bitch.
Yeah. You know, I was a big fan of the Pontiac.
The Firebird.
The Firebird. Is a good one. From the first Transformers.
That one's Smoking the Bandit too, isn't it?
Yeah, the Pontiac Trans Am.
I think I had the Transformers.
My uncle still has his Pontiac Trans Am. Wow. That my grandfather gave to him.
Wow. That's our segment of.
How are you gonna get it?
He's not gonna give it up. He loves his
cars. Speaking of which, 300 ZX.
It's right here, right now.
I know, dude. That thing is crazy, bro. I think it's retro as shit, bro. Like the whole dash and everything.
I know, dude.
It was ahead of its time. That should look.
Unfortunately, dude, that car right now is in a constant limbo.
All right, boys. Moving on to the next phase. Letterboxd reviews. These are actually, I think, from yesterday and today. So let's see.
Those new ones. See,
yeah,
what
I like those new ones
now.
Exactly. So let's get started with this one. This one's by Juicebox Boy. 3 stars, he says, or they say. The car chase is good, but the rest feels lifeless. I was bored for a lot of the runtime, and the mystery only captivated me at 1 or 2 points. I do like McQueen's turtleneck, which we all agreed on, I think.
Oh, yeah, his fashion sense was...
Try this again one day, but for now, not for me. 3 stars.
But I think it also just depends on what type of lens you're watching the movie, right?
Yeah.
Like for us, I think we're capable enough to put ourselves... Okay, we're watching this movie in the theater in 1969. How are we going to feel?
It would have been the most badass thing ever.
Yeah.
It would have been hella badass. Yeah. And we're not saying the movie isn't badass, but at the same time, it's just like when we've seen movies like Heat...
Swooning over McQueen.
Or like other movies that like show range and stuff. Like, fuck, it's kind of...
Actually, funny enough, because I saw Heat at the New Beverly, which is Tarantino's theater, and I saw this one. I saw Bullet at the New Beverly, too, and I remember...
You just live at the New Beverly?
For a good year or two, I was like always there. Yeah, but like, but dude, the audience was incredible. Like everyone loved that movie.
Well, again, too, like,
oh, so you're just basing it on other people's opinions, huh? That's why you liked it?
Well, isn't that why we do this?
No, overall, I mean, definitely for the eras.
Yeah.
It's a great movie, but now comparing it to everything else, it's a little difficult.
And I feel like maybe the younger generation, like, it'd probably be hard to catch their attention with this, too. So. Yeah.
And we're not saying that we're old, right?
We're not. Yeah, we're not.
We got too much brain rot. Just TikTok and Instagram reels. It's
crazy. Yeah, Joy, that's your problem.
All right, moving on. This is by...
Why do you send me memes all day?
This is by C. Race Davis. 4 stars. They say, Steve McQueen in that turtleneck, elbow patch, sport coat, and shoulder holster made me question everything. It's a great film and a very similar class to The Conversation. I haven't seen that one. Have you seen it? The Conversation. By that, I mean that it's an underrated, slow burn, somewhat restrained crime thriller that is very much worth your time. Come for the iconic car chase, stay for the King of Cool. 4 stars. That was a good review.
I like how you put it. It was very.
I like how you said it made him question his sexuality. You know, I'm right there with him.
Yeah. Technically, didn't say it was sexuality the question. He
questioned everything, bro. Sexuality's in there.
Yeah. You're right. I'm just saying it's not just his sexuality. He almost changed careers for
this. Great review, though. Great review.
That was a good one. All right, this is by Nathan. 3 stars. An average renegade cop film with no apparent motive behind the reason for going renegade. The chase scene was pretty cool, though. I hear anyone who owns a Mustang is pretty cool. Interesting.
Yeah,
except for the
I think Nick six.
Definitely right though. You
know. Nick is one of those guys. Thank you. Nick is definitely one of those guys. So that was a
George
3-star.
George is one of those haters.
Yeah, what are you driving, George?
Oh, I got a 4-cylinder, dude. Come on.
It's barely hanging.
You
on.
A four? You got a Mercedes? A 4-cylinder?
Yeah, dude. It's a C250. It's.
I'm sorry.
It's just great on gas mileage.
It's time to upgrade, George.
Worse, brother.
I can't complain.
It's time to upgrade. I feel like if George could,
Jesus Christ.
George, you'd buy a Cybertruck, wouldn't you?
No.
George supports Elon.
I think before the Nazi Elon, he probably would have.
I'd still do like Tesla brand, but I'd probably do like a Model 3 or something like.
Wow, so you support a Nazi? Disgusting, despicable behavior. Bullet
South African
like
Nazi.
South African Nazi. Apartheid. All right, last one. Danny True, 4 stars. I miss the days when films had more car chases and less minorities.
Wow.
Oh my god,
I don't know about
Isaac,
that one.
Isaac, be honest. Isaac, did you get on this movie?
No,
I don't
the
know
brownest
about that
one,
Danny True.
What were the reviews on that one?
Did anybody comment under that?
Like, that was just one. There was just one like by us, so I could like refer to it. But
based on
just
know,
for that reason,
yeah.
Like, just so you get referred
based
to
on
it.
Nick's cackle, of course he agrees. You know. You like the comment?
I mean, we had an African American doctor. I guess that's as far as it went with minorities.
On
the cop, but a security guard that had no lines.
So this dude, okay, let's play the game of who did this guy vote for.
I don't think we need to figure that one out, but
yeah,
Jesus Christ. All right, pretty
I think even Steve McQueen could solve that mystery without killing him.
Oh yeah, big time, big time. But anyways, moving on. That was a good way to end.
Terrible
that.
Terrible fucking review.
But personally, I give this film a 10 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
I know it's not a 10 out of 10, but I look at it with a different lens because I can appreciate it for what it is. And I feel like I could put this in the back. You know, I hear that soundtrack going and
the soundtrack is amazing.
I feel like Steve McQueen. You know what I mean?
You're saying that if you didn't watch the movie, you just listen to it, you'd enjoy yourself?
Like, movies were still...
Yeah.
I
listen to the soundtrack whenever I can, actually.
Yeah. Movies during this time were definitely like an art form still. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And they lost it, I feel like, over.
Yeah, because this is 40 years after cinema started. So it's like we said, it was a baby.
I'll go. It started off as a 5 for me because of the pacing and just.
It wasn't even slow, George.
I mean, it's a bit slow for my taste. I didn't like the pacing. I didn't like the acting too much. But the car chase sequence, phenomenal. I really like the inaction, showing us what he's actually, you know, like everything in camera.
It picks up.
Really good. And then also just the editing in this is fantastic.
So Oscar worthy.
It brings it up to a 6.5.
6.5, solid, yeah. Solid. Nick.
Yeah, I'm close to George. I'm about a 7 right now.
Okay.
I think that for me, there's the small minor mistakes. I mean, we talk about it. Movies make those. I'm not gonna nitpick that. It was just for me more the acting. I think King of Cool makes sense, but like, if all you are is cool, you start to be less
what
cool.
What else?
You know?
What else is there? Who's behind the mask?
There's no depth to character.
Exactly. I start to crave more from him, and when I don't see more, it just takes me away from it.
Yeah. Love it. Isaac, last one.
I give it a 7.5.
Wow, look at that.
And I like it because it has a lot to offer, right? It's kind of, it's like, it's the same reason why we like the first Fast and the Furious movie. It's still raw. Like, it's still not, like, overly produced. Like, it's good, and you can watch that, and it's not, like, gross. Like, when you watch, again, a new Fast and the Furious movie, that's
disgusting.
Like, it's disgusting. Come on. Like there's... I feel like even in the mistakes that Steve McQueen's character made as a detective, I feel like there were realistic mistakes of what a 1960s cop would do, right? Like,
it just, and he wasn't even racist.
Yeah.
That was honestly the most unrealistic part of the whole thing.
But
that's true.
And
that's true.
So it just like it feels like I'm actually watching a person for all his flaws and all whatever's going on in terms of what we believe, you know, Steve McQueen did a good job or not. But I give it a 7.5. And I recommend that to people. Like, if you want to watch something, period, and it's also not a hard watch and it's not, like, overly slow. I don't know what George was talking about in terms of slow. But
yeah, I mean, I think the character Frank Bullitt, like, you know, he is who he is, but McQueen plays it in a way where you can tell that there's history. Like, this is not
his and
first...
Also,
or even his 20th rodeo. This is deep in his career.
And also,
too, like, there's a reason they choose him. Which, I'm not going to lie, like, I mean, I hate to get back into it when we're at the end, but seeing the police work, seeing the detective work, it was great. But watching and realizing that every single person he was either meant to protect died, and then everybody, like, he had nobody at the end. Just had a trail of bodies. I'm just like, dude.
And just his baby.
It was so good, like, detective and police work, to then just end up with a trail of bodies.
That's why he's upset. You know, he's like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
But again, and then he just, like, it's also the 1960s. Men weren't talking about
their
feelings.
Avengers.
Nah.
We saved the city.
Yeah.
So again,
everything's destroyed. It caused more damage.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So again, I liked it. It felt very period. Somehow. It felt really nice to watch. And
yeah.
And I don't think it, like, I would not recommend this movie. Somebody told
a good
movie. If somebody told me, hey, I'm going to watch this tomorrow, do you think I should? I'm like, yeah, I think 100%. Yeah, you won't be overly disappointed if you watch it, you know.
Yeah, you know what? Thank you for that, Isaac. I think I'm glad that you guys watched it. And I'm glad that most of you enjoyed it.
I think we all enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you mostly enjoyed it, but I know there are things. Yeah, but this is one of, like I said, one of my favorite films, and just it's just the only way to describe this movie is cool. That's kind of it. Yeah.
It's a cool movie.
It is a cool movie. But I think that wraps it up for this review of Bullitt. Thanks again for listening to us. And you guys know where to find us on Instagram, our email, wherever. That's it. Four guys.
One film.
We out.